The Carnegie Endowment for International Peace came out with two publications. They state that transparency about oil production in California is important because it will lead to greater use of cleaner oils, ultimately reducing California's carbon footprint. I spoke with David Livingston, a fellow with the Energy and Climate Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, to find out more.
Transparency is important, you know, not just in California, but I would argue that it's critical on a global scale for the oil sector, and that California simply has the opportunity to be a real leader in this space, as it has been in so many areas of environmental policy. So in the oil sector, this transparency is based upon findings from our own program's research that there's up to a 60% difference between the most emissions-intensive oil and the least emissions-intensive oil in the state of California. Now, that's referring to greenhouse gas emissions, not only carbon, but also methane being the other major GHG that's associated with oil and gas production. And the key thing to note here is it's not all about the oils themselves, the physical commodity itself that happens to be dirtier, cleaner, more emissions-intensive, or less emissions-intensive. That number really refers to the entire crude oil to product pathway. So from the energy and the emissions involved in getting that oil out of the ground through any processing it needs to do before it goes to a refinery, to the transporting it to a refinery, refining it into different petroleum products, and then all the way to the final combustion of that slate of products. That's what we track in our program through something called the Oil Climate Index. And it's that's discovered that there's a 60% gap between what we estimate to be the state's least emissions-intensive oil and the most emissions-intensive oil. Now, the key thing here is we don't know that for sure. And the reason we don't know that for sure is because there's no systematic mechanism in place for mandatory reporting of the key data points that are needed to understand every oil's life cycle emissions or every crude to product pathway's life cycle emissions. It's very easy to collect. Most of it is data which is already collected and recorded and used in some way by the companies that are involved along the petroleum supply chain, because they need to know, for example, the quality of the oil that they're trying to market to different refineries. And refineries need to know, for example, exactly how much energy they're using, exactly how much natural gas they're using to run their operations to produce different volumes of different petroleum products. But the problem is that there's no centralized agency, there's no centralized repository for the public good that collects this information, and that can then use it to estimate what are the cleaner oils and oil-to-product processes in California, what are some of the dirtier ones, both inside the state as well as outside the state, and then just treating them equally, treating them fairly on the basis of their emissions and saying, let's set up a system that will encourage the cleaner oils to come to market first, and then let's use those dirtier oils as a last resort, if it even becomes necessary, over the arc of the next several decades.
Where do we find the dirtiest oil in California?
I would be hesitant to finger point and say, this is the dirtiest oil now and forever, all in time. I will say that in our initial sampling of different oils, we found there's a particular oil called Midway Sunset, which has been producing since 1894. It's located near Bakersfield, and it was immensely productive at the beginning of its life, and it actually still remains one of the top producing fields in the state at around 70,000 barrels a day at last check. The thing is, in order to continue producing at those levels, it requires more and more energy input in the way of steam that's used to increase pressure in the reservoir and get that last remaining oil to come up. And so what we found is that Midway Sunset, this field in California, even though it's been a very productive field over its lifetime, and by looking at it, you might not think that it's particularly dirtier oil than any other crude oil resource, the energy that's needed as input energy to get that oil out means that it has a greenhouse gas footprint that's similar or comparable to some of the more emissions intensive fields in Nigeria or Alberta and the oil sands or other parts of the world that have oil resources that have for longer been on our let's say our environmental radar.
Where do alternative forms of energy come into play here in regards to economic feasibility as well as sustainability?
Oil is going to be with us for many decades, if not another century to come. It's a incredibly energy dense resource. It has great value and has had great economic value, you know, over our kind of history of industrialization as a society on this planet. And it continues to have a near monopoly in the transport sector. And unlike the power sector, where natural gas as well as renewables such as wind, hydropower, solar especially, are increasingly competing with legacy fossil fuels like coal, in the transport sector, oil has no real viable, scalable, economically attractive alternative at this moment in time. Now, electric battery costs have been coming down precipitously for electric vehicles, and the overall cost of those vehicles have also been coming down as a result of innovations in material science, just changes in business models that are being led by innovative companies like Tesla, et cetera. So the point at which a alternative, let's say, electricity-fueled vehicle, an electric car, if you will, is going to be competitive with an internal combustion engine vehicle running on fossil fuels is not that far away into the future. But with oil prices where they are today, it's a moving target, and it's a much, much more steep climb for electric vehicles to become competitive than it was when oil was above $100 per barrel. That means, we would argue, you need to find other opportunities to reduce emissions in the transport sector, in the very oil-reliant transport sector, all the while we're moving towards eventually a post-oil or a minimized oil future. So even as we very much laud and very much encourage some of the innovations and the developments that are going on in the mobility space, not just the move to electric vehicles, but also the exciting, you know, integrations of vehicle automation as well as ride-sharing services and transport network companies all working together to optimize our transport system and use less fuel, use less time, give people, you know, greater lives and much more enjoyable commutes. We think it's also necessary to look at the very old school, unexciting, traditional oil sector and say, are there emissions reductions that can be squeezed out of this sector even as we continue to rely on oil? And the answer to that clearly is yes. So we think there are a number of different strategies and approaches that are always very specific and contextual to every crude oil, every extraction point. But there's clearly a toolbox that can be tapped into to make some marginal emissions reductions in the oil sector, even as oil continues to remain a fairly dominant fuel in the transport sector for the next few decades to come.
Is there anything else you would like to add?
Well, just to your last point, the other thing I would point out as well is that, you know, we started off this conversation by talking about transparency and just having a little bit more transparency along the supply chain in the oil sector. And I think it's important to recognize that this isn't about targeting oil, sealing it out. You know, it's not an unscientific crusade or anything like that. But if you look at the stringency of the requirements for supply chain reporting for alternative fuels like biofuels that are trying to enter the transport sector and add a little bit of diversity and alternative options for fueling our vehicles, the reporting requirements for all those biofuels are so much greater than the reporting requirements that are currently placed on the diesel and the gasoline that we use in our vehicles today. So it wouldn't be interesting if every time you went to the pump and put the gasoline nozzle into your vehicle, you could choose from a litany of different fuels, and you saw right there on the pump the little label that also not only said the octane number, but also had the life cycle greenhouse gas emissions that were associated with getting that fuel right there to the pump. It would be so wonderful to have a sticker where you could just compare them all right there at the pump and make your decision. Whether you're making a decision on environmental criteria or economic criteria is up to you. But I think that's the ultimate kind of end goal vision of what this increased transparency would hopefully lead to.
It feels like it holds the public more accountable in that way.
Exactly. It makes everyone a stakeholder. And I think that empowering individual consumers with information has proven time and time again to be one of the great untapped opportunities whenever we're tackling a great societal challenge like, you know, climate change, healthy eating, whatever it may be.
That was David Livingston, a fellow with the Energy and Climate Program at the Carnegie Endowment for Peace.